set. All right, great. I guess we'll get started. It's about 1:15. We'll maybe get some stragglers coming in. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm here to continue on with the sort of the business analytics track of all of this. And actually, I'll be alluding to, if you've seen either of the other two prior presentations, in many ways, each of them were steps that got taken off of the work that we did here. So we're going to be talking about segmenting Major League Baseball fans, talking specifically about what we did for the Indians, but things that are more generalizable, obviously, to other teams in the league. And you have already heard some of the things that have been done working with this information. So we'll keep we'll allude to that as well. My name is Eric Paquette. I am a senior vice president at Copernicus. Copernicus is a marketing consulting company that does research, advanced analytics, typically custom research to help brands identify their targets, their positioning strategy or their messaging strategy. And also we do analytic work to help them with media mix and media planning decisions. So we work not only for Major League or other sports teams, we work in a broad range of industries and categories with both business-to-business and business-to-consumer companies. And actually, what we're doing here is the kind of thing that gets done in most, even mid to large-sized companies when it comes to helping to define marketing strategy. We're trying to define targets. Who is it that I'm going to spend the most attention going after with my marketing investments, with my marketing messages? What exactly should we be saying about ourselves, and how do we find those people to actually reach them with marketing activities? Most big brands do those types of things on a daily basis, and this is the kind of thing that is sort of new to teams and we think is a big area of opportunity. So we're going to talk specifically about Cleveland here, and as Bill did earlier, if you guys have questions at any point, just I think raise your hand and let's deal with them as they come up rather than saving them all for the end. So Cleveland has had sort of a unique situation coming into the last few years. Not only had the team gone from a period of absolutely fantastic performance, a long sellout streak, deep appearances deep in the playoffs a bunch of years. The Cleveland economy and the Cleveland market in particular had all kinds of issues that were similar to issues focused by or faced by other markets in the country, but some that were even more significant. So there were at least four Fortune 500 companies that essentially picked up and moved from Cleveland, taking away a big potential corporate sponsor base, taking away lots of people. Cleveland had the second largest population decline of a major city in the United States, second only to New Orleans. We know what happened in New Orleans. There was a fairly significant event that happened there that caused it. Cleveland was next on that list. So, you know, in addition to the general economic difficulties that everybody else in the country was facing, Cleveland was facing even more significant problems. And, you know, the situation with the team and the ballpark and everything else was not perfect for the situation either. The ballpark design, while fantastic when they were selling out every night for however many years and had loads and loads of corporate sponsors, was not ideal. With 135 suites, it was difficult to keep all of those filled. The season ticket product had become increasingly or less relevant to the fan base. The season ticket decline, from their height to where it was when we started doing this work, was a significant decline. Fans were becoming increasingly able to get discounted tickets. They were able to make decisions and still do at the last minute, right? If I know that there aren't going to be stadium's not going to be full, there's no real urgency for me to go out at the beginning of the year and buy tickets ahead of time. And, you know, Cleveland has had ups and downs in terms of performance, obviously significant ones. So there have been significant rebuilding years where you would see expected declines in attendance, but they weren't seeing the same rebound that you would expect in attendance when things were going well, right? Over the last few years, they have had successful seasons. And basically, you know, the situation, if you were to look at ticket sales, if you were to look at season ticket sales, looked like a stock chart of a stock that you just wanted to run away from. It was setting, you know, lower highs and lower lows at each sort of successive point in time. And really, you know, they've been bringing analytics and more advanced techniques and tools to the decision-making process around player evaluation and how to build a team and what my player personnel strategy should be. And really, there was a fundamental need to bring the same rigor to the business side, okay, to make the same decisions or at least use as much information as possible to make strategy decisions when it came to marketing the team. And so that's what we were brought on to do, really, to provide a much better understanding of fans, what types of opportunities different types of fans presented to them, and so they could help to make better decisions around marketing strategy. And even, interestingly, as we'll see, sort of bigger, broader brand strategy in many ways. Some of the things that you can affect and the things that act as marketing vehicles for a major league team are much more varied than you might think of for, you know, a consumer product that you might buy from P&G, right? They're going to do segmentation. They're going to figure out who their targets are. They're going to advertise to them. You think about how a team interacts with its fans. There's marketing, right? There's direct marketing. There's typical advertising. There's all the digital things that you can do. Now we've got promotions. But then you just think about the fan experience, right? Every time I go into the park, every time I watch this game on TV, I have a significant number of things affecting how I perceive this product, whether I'm having a good time or not, that go above and beyond just the performance of the team. And so when you do this work for a Major League Baseball team, for a football team, for any professional sports teams, one of the interesting things that came out of it is that there are many, many more things that you can do with this work than maybe you can with just a traditional product or service. Isn't this all about winning? Just win, baby, right? Obviously, yes. Winning drives attendance. Very clearly, winning drives attendance. And if you win all the time and you win very successfully, you can keep your ballparks full most of the time, right? Now, actually, we can all, I think of markets in Major League Baseball where actually winning, in fact, has not done quite enough, right? There are teams that do win on a regular basis where they still are challenged to get enough people showing up at the ballpark on a regular basis, even into the playoff races in some markets. So that clearly is part of it. And really the goal here of improved marketing activities, improved marketing strategy, is to accentuate the highs and to minimize the dips and the lows, right? The stronger a relationship you have with your fans, the better experience they have when they come to the ballpark, the better able they are going to be to withstand the lows and to spend more and do more with you during the highs. So it is about winning. Winning certainly helps. If you can guarantee that your team is going to win every year, maybe you don't need this. But unfortunately for all of us fans and teams alike, it's hard to guarantee that every time. So what are we talking about when we talk about segmentation? Fundamentally, we're taking basically this broad group of fans. Bill talked about the broad number of fans that exist at some level in every market. Okay, and you know, so you take the Rangers, who are now have over 3 million people who are watching a game, attending a game, or what, listening on the radio, I guess was the other one. One of those three categories, right? Three and a half million people who fit into that. All of those people are not the same, right? All of those people are not the same in terms of who they are. They're not the same in terms of why they like the Rangers, why they want to interact with the Rangers. They're not the same in terms of how much they're going to spend. They're not the same in terms of where you're going to find them with media. They're not the same in terms of what you would say to them if you were going to find them with media. They're very, very different. And so what this process is designed to do is to divide up that audience, to divide up the fans into distinct groups that share a common set of characteristics. Okay? There's lots of ways to do segmentation. At sort of the most basic level, you see strategies around demographic segmentation. We're going to look at men versus women, or we're going to look at older men versus younger men versus older women versus younger women. Very basic way to do it. You can also sort of categorize people just on their buying behavior. I'm going to put heavy buyers over here, and I'm going to put light buyers over here. What we're talking about doing here is a much more involved and more sophisticated approach to understanding fans in a more complete way. Right? Every older guy is not the same. and they're not the same in terms of how they perceive the Indians or the Rangers or the Red Sox or toothpaste or whatever, right? It's trying to put together groups of people that share a common set of attitudes, common set of needs, reasonably common set of demographics, and a common set of things that they're looking for from the team. Okay, so that fundamentally is what we're trying to do here. We're trying to take the 3.5 million people in the Rangers example, and we're trying to group them up into different sort of complete pictures of people, and as we think about them. And so as you think about this, right, you look at this example, and could these two people possibly want the same thing when they go to a game? I'm from Boston, so I picked the Red Sox as this case. There's two great pictures that always pop up when you search for the Red Sox. One is the fat guy on the left, and the other is about an 8-year-old kid who's giving people the finger. And it's like, well, yeah. Both of those things perfectly indicative of Boston fans. So, I mean, other than beer, could you possibly think that these two folks want the same thing when they attend the game? And the answer is no. And the other thing to remember is that different types of fans contribute significantly different types of revenue and amounts of revenue to you as a team, right? So these two folks, quite potentially, are contributing very different amounts to you, and as you're trying to do everything that you can to increase revenue for your team, it's important to understand who are the folks who are really going to be buying the most tickets, who are going to be buying the most hot dogs, who are going to be buying the most shirts and hats, who are going to be valuable to you from a corporate partnership perspective. And it's that fundamental understanding of who they are and what they're worth that we're trying to go through the process of doing here. So why segment? A few marketing quotes that are out there. Phil Kotler, the dean of American marketing, essentially, is the most important strategic decisions are targeting and positioning. He actually often adds, if you nail these things, everything else follows. If you know who your target is, it is much simpler to understand what you should do. So as you think about the decisions that you make in marketing a team, you think about the decisions that you make in ballpark design, you think about the decisions that you make in concessions, how much am I going to charge for things, where should these ushers go, what am I going to put on the scoreboard, it can become overwhelming. Right? Understand, because there are so many different types of people that you could potentially be appealing to. And so without a clear target, it oftentimes is very difficult to make those decisions. It's difficult to make those decisions in the first place. It's even more difficult to make the right decision without knowing it. David Verklin, a guy who used to be a CEO of one of our parent companies, said, if you run the wrong train, every train is the wrong stop, right? If you are pursuing a path of marketing to a particular group and it's the wrong group, everything that you're doing is probably wrong. Said another way, Bill Birnbach, the great advertising guy, a great talent sailing in the wrong direction will, like the lost pilot breaking the speed record, reach his destination all the more quickly, right? So this is all about understanding your focus. Once we understand who it is that we're trying to appeal to, it's much simpler to decide, what do we want to say? What do we want to do? Where do we want to advertise? When do we want to advertise? How much should we be investing in social media? How much should we be investing in TV? All of those types of decisions become much more clear. So what did we do specifically in the Cleveland case? So here, Bill talked about going out and doing general samples of consumers in the market. We went out and did something similar, though our focus was on fans. We don't care about you. Sorry, we're the Indians. We don't care about you if you're not a fan. We're not in the business of trying to, we'll certainly be happy to have more people show up if we start winning. Most of our opportunity is going to become from driving incremental visits, incremental revenue, incremental trips, incremental everything from people who are at least some level of a fan with us. So we ended up doing 1,400 surveys with people, and to be a fan for us, we said, okay, we're going to ask you on a 5-point scale, are you not at all of a fan, or are you a huge fan? 5. And we wanted to be fairly inclusive. We didn't want to weed out anybody who maybe isn't coming a lot, who potentially we could win over. So we said, okay, anybody who is 3 or more on that scale, we're going to include you. We're going to let you do this survey. It's a long survey. We want to collect lots of information for folks. I think we spent 40 minutes asking them about things. And The one fortunate thing about doing this for a baseball team as opposed to doing this for a toilet paper brand is people are much more interested and engaged in spending 40 minutes answering questions about a baseball team than they are answering questions about toilet paper. We gathered information from a variety of sources, so we want to go out and talk to folks in the general population. Right? We just want to make sure that we've got that overall market view of folks who live in the Cleveland area. We also wanted to leverage databases that exist. We want to go find season ticket buyers, and we'll talk about some of the whys there in a bit. But ultimately, once we identify these different groups, we want to be able to project them back into tools that the team is going to be able to use. So we want to talk to enough people in the Indians database that when we're done with this process, we can go through and score the database and say who among the ticket buyers fall into each of these groups that we're going to be developing. We also wanted to talk to season ticket holders. You're just going out into general populations are not going to find enough season ticket holders because it's a relatively small group. But for every team, they are hugely valuable, and we wanted to make sure that we could get enough of those folks so that we could understand where they fall in terms of these segments of customers or consumers that we're identifying, but also drill into them just as their own entity more deeply to understand what's going on with them. Yep. We took a broad. We stratified that group actually, and to get some who were smaller package types. We had weeknight games, or full season, or half season, or I forget the 10 game. I think was the something like a 10 game or a 20 game. So little of everything. We wanted to talk to. We actually talked to current season ticket holders. We actually talked to lapsed season ticket holders. So give me the database for all the people the last 2 years who used to have season tickets and who have left. Let's talk to them and find out what's going on. And the one other piece about this is that, where can we find an Indians fan? Well, if we go looking really hard, we can probably find an Indians fan just about at any point or place on the globe. That's probably not who we want to be talking to. We wanted to focus in on the geography where we figured we would be able to drive the most incremental opportunity, the most trips. So we ended up picking, I forget what it was. It was about 13 counties or something like that that surrounded the ballpark where we spent the most of our time the most of our emphasis doing this work. And we arrived at that actually from an analytic perspective. We actually took the ticket database and said, okay, where are all these people coming from, and how often are they showing up when they're in Cleveland versus in Toronto? We wanted to find a geography that represents the places that we can grow. This is our process for segmentation, and I guess because we've got people here who are a little bit more statistically inclined than many places, I'll talk about this a little bit. We have a long survey. Again, we have about 40 minutes of questions at our disposal to try and group people up with, right? And we've got attitudes, and we've got needs, and we've got their experiences that they've had with the team, and we've got lifestyle characteristics, and we've got psychographics. And in addition to that, we're marrying it up to ticket databases, so we're able to bring in the ticket buying behaviors. We know when they've bought. We know where they've sat. We are linking it up with the live analytics data, so we know, do they like jazz concerts or not, right? We have tons and tons of information about people, who they are, where they are, how they think. And what we're trying to do as part of this process when we develop segments is only to grab the elements of that are important to us, okay? Every attitude, we had a battery of probably 40 or 50 attitudinal statements. I like this, I think that, I would rather do this. Not all of those are going to be helpful to us in terms of defining who is a good target for us versus not. And so we evaluate all of those things against what we call measures of value. So measures of value here could represent how much do I spend on tickets? How often do I go? How likely am I to become a season ticket holder? How much of an advocate am I for the team? Am I the kind of person who tells everybody that I know? Am I the type of person who calls into talk radio and says positive things about the team, or am I not? Advocacy strategies are taking on a bigger part of marketing activities today just because of the ways that people can reach people. They've always mattered, right? You could always call your friend up and say, I want you to know about this, or you should try this new brand of toothpaste. Now today, people can get on their computers and in 140 characters or less can tell 500 of their closest friends. And So we're using this type of approach to winnow through all of the information that we have available to define the set of characteristics that we're going to use in defining the segments. Again, for anybody who's interested in some more of the sort of the behind-the-scenes analytics here, we're going through a few things. That we do a factor analysis, right? We've got this long questionnaire, and there are invariably redundancies in the data that we want to try and understand and mitigate. So we'll do a factor analysis to do that. We do some normalization of survey data. It's a funny thing. Different people answer surveys different ways. People use scales different ways. I may be a wildly optimistic guy, so on a 5-point scale, I give everything a 4 or a 5. Somebody else may be a full curmudgeon and gives everything a 2 or a 3. If we don't do that normalization process as we begin to segment people into different groups, what we find are the people who answer surveys differently, and that's not terribly helpful to us. So we go through that. And then we go through that testing step that I just described. We look at correlations to see which variables are indicative of somebody being likely to go to more games rather than less games, likely to spend more on tickets rather than less on tickets, likely to become a season ticket holder versus not a season ticket holder, likely to be an advocate for the team versus not an advocate for the team. We take that information in, we run it into an approach called K-means clustering, though there's a bunch of other approaches that you can use for segmentation. And then importantly, we actually evaluate that against a combination of statistical data or statistical criteria. There are things we want to make sure that the statistic blocking and tackling, to take a sort of a football frame of this, that stuff all works. But we also have to think about this from a managerial perspective. We're not necessarily solving for the most precise statistical thing. We're finding groups that are not only statistically real, we trust that these groups exist when we're done with this process, but that Alex, when we're done, actually knows what to do with them. They make sense. They're understandable. They have very different levels of potential value to us as groups. They can be found with media. So there are a bunch of other criteria that we're infusing into this process. Just sort of a look at how we're going through this. We may have again 40, 50 different attitudes, and we're looking to see which of these are positively or negatively, just strongly correlated with my likelihood to go to games, or the amount that I'm spending for each ticket, or the likelihood to buy season tickets, or how likely I am to be an advocate for the team. And it's interesting, so not all of the ideas that we have are going to be good ones. And in fact, many of them are not going to be good ones. And my strong suspicion, we're getting ready to do this for the Red Sox as well, my strong suspicion is that the list of things that we want to worry about is going to be different from market to market and team to team. What we found in the Cleveland case is items like, I'm an expert on baseball, and I've been a fan since I was a child, and I pay careful attention to the game, are all things that are very positively correlated with being a potentially valuable fan. I only go to the big games, negatively correlated, right? We actually don't want just the people who only want to go to the big games. And this part was fascinating to us. I mean, one of the things that we figured would emerge as a segment is that group that is the sort of the front runner, I only pay to see a winner, actually not positively or negatively correlated with any of this. It ended up not being a significant dimension in the segments that we identified, this need or thirst for winning versus not, and I'm only willing to be there if they're a winner, was not a key defining characteristic. So an idea that I think most of us thought going into this would be, in fact, wasn't. And I guess what's important about this approach is that it gives you a way to evaluate those ideas and say, okay, not all of these are going to be good ones. We can identify the good ones. What did we end up with? We ended up identifying 5 different segments. You've seen the names actually from Bill and maybe even Damon this morning, talked about them as well. Affluent Alan, Family Man Phil, Value Victor or Victoria, Event Emily, and Homebody Hank and Helen. And we, as you will see, will become most interested in the top 3 of these segments from the perspective of the Indians. Affluent Alan, in many ways, is what you would expect. It's generally older, higher average income, at least for the individual. I think Bill showed that the household level was incomes were actually about the same between Alan and Phil. A little bit more affluent, he's making more money, and he doesn't have any mouths to feed in the household. I think on average, Alan was 53 or 54 years old. And Alan goes a lot. Alan goes to the game, at least relatively, a lot compared to some of these other groups. Phil got a different set of needs and motivations. Alan wants things, wants it to be a comfortable experience for him. Phil wants it to be a good experience for his family. When Phil goes, not every time that he goes, but most of the time, or much of the time that he's going, he's bringing his kids. Bringing a couple kids, he's going in a group of four or five people. Now what do I care about? Now I care that the kids are going to be happy, there are going to be things to keep them entertained. It's not going to cost me $72,000 to buy four hot dogs and four ice creams and four popcorns and four sodas for everything. Two very, very different groups in terms of what they're looking for when they go to the Indians game. A third group that has emerged, and actually if anybody who saw the presentation from Damon, a group that was being targeted in a fairly significant way from a promotional perspective, we're calling Value, Victor, or Victoria. Group that's making a last-minute decision about going to the game. They're probably, not probably, they're definitely paying less for tickets than anybody else. They're going when there are promotions involved. They're really, there is a cost component to it. I don't want to pay a lot, but there's also a value component. They're making a pretty critical decision of the matchup, of the weather, of the promotions that might be available. Am I getting a free hat, or am I getting dollar hot dogs, or am I going to get some benefit because I've got my student ID? All three of these groups actually go to the game a fair amount and are folks that at some level probably need to be targeted, at least until the stadium fills up a little bit more than it is right now. Event Emily, I mean, I think we all would recognize this, the person where it's a big deal. It's a big celebration. We're going to the game once a year, right? So Alan is going seven times a year. Emily is going once. It's a big deal when Emily goes to Emily, but in terms of who we maybe want to spend our time with, who we're going to spend our marketing investment against, until we have made sure that every single Alan shows up every single time to every single game, we probably don't want to go spending money on Emily. And then the last group we're calling Homebody Hank and Helen, and this picture that we have depicting them is one of the most optimistic views of what these folks are like. These are the folks that probably complain about having to walk down to the end of their driveway to get their mail. So going to the end of the city and dealing with traffic and dealing with crowds and everything else is not high on their list of things to do. Hank watches a lot of games on TV. He interacts with the Indians, so there is value to him in some ways there. But if what our goal is to drive incremental attendance, Hank's probably not our guy, unless you're going to pick him up in a limo every night. So as we begin to evaluate these segments and where we want to spend our time, what the first column here, the first bar represents, is the percentage of fans that fall into each of these groups. And so they're the same numbers that you saw on the prior page. We've taken Alan and we've carved him up into two groups, into a season ticket holder version of Alan and to a non-season ticket holder version of Alan. But Alan and Phil combined comprise about a third of fans, but over 80% of the revenue for the Indians right now. Okay, so they are the ones who are most likely to show up. They are the ones who are the most likely to show up and spend money when they show up. Victor, Victoria, they show up. They actually make up a fair amount of the attendance in that third bar. 17% of the people are contributing to a bit over a quarter of the attendance on an index basis. That's actually reasonably significant. Now you look at their ticket revenue. They actually don't even contribute their portion of the population in terms of ticket revenue, because when they go, they're buying less expensive tickets, whether that is through StubHub, whether that's through just buying a less expensive ticket, or because I'm going to a particular promotion. Well, I guess the one other thing to point out here, which is maybe stating the absolute obvious, is just the incredible value associated with a season ticket holder, right? So a season ticket holder, Alan, when they're a season ticket holder, represents a grand total of 2% of fans, and they individually make up over a third of the ticket revenue for the team. So hugely valuable when you get them. Yep. Total revenue, we were just throwing in hot dogs and the shirts and the hats and the other things that you would buy, concessions and merchandise for the most part. And so you see, I think it's Phil, stands out a little bit relative to ticket revenue, because when he goes, he's got four screaming mouths to feed at the game. So, okay. When we have a chart like this, a natural inclination for many marketers, for many people who are evaluating these things, is to say, okay, for that third of fans, we've won. Look at that, we've won. We've got 80% of our revenue is coming from them, which means we should be going after everybody else. Well, no, right? So we need to think about this in some perspective, which is sort of how high is high. If Allen goes to the game seven times a year, and we have a game 81 times a year, there's probably opportunity to get Allen to come more than he's going. And in fact, if we look at Allen's, if we look at the full collection of Allen's that we talked to, we still have about a quarter of them who haven't been in the last couple of years. They've been a grand total of zero times. So with both Allen, with both Phil, there is ample opportunity to increase their frequency attending, to even get them to go to the ballpark in the first place is an opportunity that exists. So as we begin to sort of work through the construct, when we get one of these Allens, they are dramatically more valuable to us than an Emily or a Hank, and there's still plenty of opportunity to grow with them. That's where we should be spending our time. And here, in the case of the Indians in particular, with Allen and Phil, there's a lot of leverage associated with winning them over as a customer, as winning them over as a more frequent attending fan. There's a lot of value associated with it, and there's a lot of opportunity associated with it. One of the more fascinating things that we did, I'll touch on this again in a little bit, we're in a much more volatile industry than most things. The perceptions of the team not only change year to year, but maybe week to week, maybe hour to hour. Somebody goes out and blows a save and everybody's angry and things are different than when we win with the walk-off home run. And so one of the things that we wanted to understand is, knowing that we were doing this at a fixed point in time, what can we learn about other points in time when the competitive situation might be different for us? And so we asked them, tell me what are you going to spend, or tell me how often you're going to go and what are you going to spend when the Indians are preseason favorites to win the World Series, or when they're thought to be a postseason contender, or when they are likely to be in a 500 season or rebuilding. Obviously, this is the, as you move from right to left, you see the just win, baby, aspect of all of this. Everybody goes up. But one of the things that we found is that Allen and Phil are more stable generally than somebody like Victor or Victoria. They represent a better prospect for us in any winning situation, which is a nice thing, and not the way that it had to come out, actually. This makes it much simpler for the Indians in that they don't have to worry about sort of whipping their marketing strategy around from situation to situation. They can focus, in this case, on those two groups. We actually went back with these numbers and wondered whether people were able to tell us anything that was any good, and kind of calibrated each of these situations to actual ticket buying behavior, and were able to come within like 100,000 seats over the course of the year of being right on. So folks actually gave us pretty good answers here. We're gathering tons of information. Once we've identified these targets, we can profile them in all sorts of situations. One of the things that we wanted to understand is, what does this ticket buying process look like, right? Who's making the decision? The men, or is it women? There was a hypothesis among some with the Indians at the time that women were driving some of the ticket buying decisions, and we found that that was definitely not the case. So we understand who's coming up with the idea to go to the game. We understand how much say everybody has and whether we go to the game. We have an understanding of who typically purchases the tickets. And even for Phil, and Phil was the group where maybe there was a presupposition that women were the ones who were making the decisions for their family, we in fact were able to show and prove here that it's more often than not, it's actually a guy who's doing this. Phil, and not Phyllis, is the one who's driving this decision. We know when they buy tickets. And here, actually, this was probably a situation where it was a much more striking example than in maybe some other markets where, if you're the Red Sox and whatever, 80, 90% of the tickets get gobbled up in the first, 3 weeks of February, obviously a very different situation than the Indians. And what we're finding is that when they're buying their tickets is dramatically different. So now, okay, we've identified these different groups. We know we care about some of them more than others. We know that they have different sets of needs and attitudes and perceptions of the team and everything else. And And what we might want to say to them and what we might design for advertising could be very different for these groups. And now we also know that they buy tickets at different times. So as we start to think about when should I be marketing to them, there's obvious implications that come from here. You shouldn't spend the early part of the season, the preseason, trying to sell tickets to Emily. That's not what she's doing. 2% of Emily's bought tickets before the season started, whereas over a third of the Allens bought a bunch of tickets before the season started. So, you know, again, having this kind of information allows you to shape what am I going to say to these folks, right? If I've got these different groups that I know that I want to talk to, as I'm beginning to think about the messaging strategy for them, what do I want to say to each? When do I want to be saying it? When should I be spending my marketing investments if I want to go after Phil? When should I be spending my marketing investments if I want to go after Alan? We know where they sit. So Alan in particular was the one who stood out in many ways. Actually, Alan and Victor Victoria actually stood out. Victor Victoria, I always laugh at that from the old Blake Edwards film. That's a few of people in here might remember. But Alan is the one who is most likely to be in the more expensive seats. So what do we do with that? There are lots of things we can do with that. We can orchestrate the fan experience in different parts of the ballpark. We can try and organize how different types of folks are going to come into the ballpark. If I know I sit in certain sections of the field, the interactions that I can have with people on my way to that field could be very different than in other parts of the ballpark. You're not sitting up in the bleachers, you're sitting down low. So maybe I want to make sure the ushers that are there, or maybe I want to make sure that the attendants or the greeters or other folks who are in part of the different parts of the ballpark are a little bit more tailored to these different groups that I know exist. Okay. We know who the season tickets are and presumably where we're going to generate more of them. So this was kind of stunning. So 17% of the world is in Allen. 91% of the season ticket holders in Cleveland at the time were Allens. Where should we go trying to find more season ticket holders? Probably with the other Allens. Again, 2% of the 17% of Allens are actually season ticket holders. And we see a little bit where we're losing some of our season ticket holders. It's a little bit bigger with Phil. What's happening with Phil? You start digging into that a little bit more, and you understand that now Phil used to go to the game, and now I got four kids, and my wife won't let me go all the time anymore. Yep.
I assume this data just excludes the corporate ticket buyers.
Interesting part. No. Well.
Or does it attempt to say, well, corporations probably made up of this many affluent Allens and this many family Phils?
Yeah. So in this case, we went out to the whole season ticket buyer database that we had available to us. So we were reaching out to folks who were probably a combination of businesses and just people. And actually, one of the questions that we were asking them is, tell me, why are you buying these tickets? I think the presumption going in was that the season ticket holder piece of this, whether it was being driven by a business or an individual, was heavily business or corporate focused, right? That was the presupposition going in. And in fact, we found almost exactly the opposite case to be true. Okay, so maybe there was some bias in ultimately who we reached for the surveys, but 3/4 of the season ticket holders said, I'm buying these for pleasure. It actually might have been a business address, but I own a small business and I want to have season tickets to go see the Indians, and all right, I'm buying them under my business name because I can probably write it off. But in this case, now this is something that's obviously going to vary considerably as you go from market to market, but in Cleveland, I think it was almost a stunning revelation to see how often these guys were using this for a personal use. 84% of the last season ticket holders, over 3/4 of the current season ticket holders, say, I'm buying these for pleasure. You could add in another who were, I guess it's another 19%, so it's almost 95% of them who are using, at least some of the time, using these tickets for non-business purposes. And when we asked them about the actual use, all right, tell me how many times you go last year with using your season tickets, and now, you know, chop that up and tell me how many of those were business and how many were pleasure. I mean, it's like a 90-10 thing. So, again, my guess is that this is a very different thing in certain markets, that Boston and New York and places where there is real sort of there's ticket capacity issues, if you will. I can't get a ticket. That it's much more corporately driven in markets where it's a little less so, than there's probably a lot more folks doing this just because they want to than we might have otherwise guessed. Okay. One of the interesting things we were able to dig into, and again, that has immediate implications for how do we go to market against some of these different groups, we understood what season ticket holders, lapsed season ticket holders, and people, we did an analysis to say, who looks like these season ticket holders from a variety of perspectives? Who looks like them but isn't a season ticket holder? So sort of a really dialed-in version of the prospect. And what we found is that they all wanted different things. When we were, what is it that really matters to you about the things that we offer to you as a benefit as a season ticket holder? Very, very different. Current season ticket holders, I want loaded value on the ticket, and I want ticket exchange dates, and I want a complimentary suite rental, and those are the things that they're looking for. When we get out to the prospects, completely different set of things that are guiding their decisions. They probably haven't had season tickets. They don't understand some of the machinations of what they go through as a season ticket holder. I just want the best seats, and I want postseason ticket priority. Those are the things that are going to stimulate or motivate me to buy tickets. And so now if I'm the season ticket holder department, if I'm the sales department for a team, I now have a set of messages that go to renewals. I have another set of messages, another set of materials that go out to people who are lapsed season ticket holders. I have a third set of materials and messages that go out to people who are good prospects to be season ticket holders but who aren't or haven't been in the recent past. Bill spent a bunch of time talking about how we actually link these segments to different ways of keeping track of them moving forward. We directly linked it to the Scarborough database for media planning decisions. One of the most significant and quickest changes that occurred as a result of this and now has further evolved with the work that the agent-based modeling work that's gone on is how they are buying media. How are we flighting it? Who are we aiming it at? What are the vehicles that we're using? Very, very different now that you're able to go in and very specifically for Alan say, what does he read? What does he watch? What does he do? What does he listen to? When is he doing that, right? If you remember Bill's slides earlier, Alan actually under-indexes dramatically in terms of Facebook. It is almost impossible to find a group in the United States today who under-indexes dramatically on Facebook. Alan is that guy. The Indians' activities on Facebook should not be geared towards Alan. Alan's not the one who's looking and watching. In fact, Phil, very active on Facebook. Very active in Facebook. And, okay, so let's talk to Phil when we're doing our Facebook stuff. And if we've got promotions that we want to promote on Facebook, let's make them geared towards Phil. And the Indians actually have a social suite program where they bring fans in to sit in one of their suites and to spend the game posting on Facebook and tweeting and Instagramming and doing all of those things. We don't know exactly who that was targeted before, but it seems highly likely that in the past, before this work, that was geared towards the victors and the victorias of the world, the other group that was very active in social media. We now have a second social suite for Phil, where Phil is able to bring the family and do those same types of things. We link it up to the ticket databases. So we're linking this up and leveraging the existing ticket buyer database, the prospector data that a lot of you probably use, the live analytics data that a lot of you probably use, and we're using that information to predict for everyone in the database how likely is it that they belong in each of these segments. So now all of our direct marketing activities can either be more focused or more tailored, or both, right? So now I am directing a certain set of messages at a certain time to a certain segment. And then the other thing that we do is we link it up to other tools that you can use for more research, as we now we need to know. Now that we know Alan is who he is, and now that we know Phil is who he is, we got to do other things. We got to test our advertising with Alan and Phil to make sure it works for Alan and Phil. We got to know we want to know other things about them, so we're providing ways to do that. The other thing that has happened and that Alex and Damon talked about earlier, these segments were actually the agents in that agent-based model that was developed. So part of that modeling is now reflecting the fact and taking into account the fact that these groups behave differently. Okay, and so now we have an understanding of who they are. We're modeling what our media investment should look like, just generally in terms of up and down and mix, but also what is underlying that is who am I influencing and what kind of effect am I having? How can this, the question we get asked every time we talk to a team is, this category is so volatile, how can I trust that this works? How can I trust that this is going to work today and tomorrow and 2 years from now. So one of the things I think, one of the things that we have actually proven with the Indians, right? We looked at the we looked at their stated intentions to buy tickets and to go to the game and to spend money under different situations, and it all kind of held true. One thing that gave us some peace of mind in all of this, we actually went back for the Indians and validated about a year later. We said, okay, what? Let's go look at these segments again, and do they still hold true? Are they still equally as valuable to us? All of those things, and the answer was yes. Now, to get there, we do need to be very careful, right? This is, again, this is not toilet paper where the product coming out each and every day is very different from the product that I got before. If I have a terrible night, the team has a terrible night, how I feel about the team can change from day to day, and that's not the case with toothpaste and with toilet paper and with other things that we buy on a regular basis, but it is here. So as we develop these segments, one of the things that we were very careful to do is to only grab things that we believe to be stable characteristics of the people. I am a guy. Should be a reasonably stable characteristic for me, right? That shouldn't change based on whether the Red Sox or the Indians or the Blue Jays or the Yankees win or lose on any given night. I have always loved baseball since I was a little kid. Also very stable. Right, should be. It's sort of a, it's almost like a statement of fact rather than something that could be influenced by team performance. I think that the Red Sox management is brilliant. That would be a bad piece of information to use in this, because now if they, you know, if a conversation came up about using the using your best pitcher at different points of the game this morning, and being a Red Sox fan, I vividly remember Chad Fox giving up a home run in the first opening day however many years ago because they used their best pitcher three innings earlier. My perception of whether Red Sox management was brilliant or not might have taken a hit during those 15 minutes. So we needed to be very, very careful in doing this to grab things that were going to be stable characteristics of people. So. What has this changed, right? Okay, this is all very interesting and good, but can I do anything with it? And the answer here, as I mentioned earlier, in the case of the team, is fundamentally yes. There are so many things that we can do. As Bill Birnbach said, give me the freedom of a clear strategy. If I know what I'm doing, if I know who I'm aiming at, if I know what they want, all of the things that I'm going to do as a marketer, all of the things that I'm going to do as an operations department, all of the things that I do is the group that puts stuff up on the scoreboard, all of the things that the concessionaire is going to do, all of those decisions become so much easier to make, right? So much easier to make. So how have the Indians taken this and actually started doing things about it? The targets are integrated as part of not just their brand and marketing process, but the strategic planning process. All of the strategies and tactics that are under consideration are evaluated against these groups. Is this a good idea if we're trying to attract Alan or if we're trying to attract Phil? Yes or no? Right? Simple question. Of the four, so there are four strategic priorities for the Indians. Two of them are specifically geared towards Alan and Phil. And you think about all the things that a baseball team can be doing and worrying about, and there's more than just two fan groups, and two of those four are there. Who they target, what they message, and how they reach them has all changed as a function of understanding these groups. And as an understanding of their priorities. Right, business plans are being tailored to the experience for those two groups. Marketing and communications messages are being created with these two groups in mind. They're being tested against these two groups. Media and promotional plans have been optimized for these two groups. So. Again, understanding who these are influences the creative. What does the advertising look like? What should we be saying? Who should be in it? What does that look like? It's obviously very different for Alan than it would be for Emily. If you know you're aiming at Alan, it's not that hard to figure out what it should be. If you're aiming at Emily, it's not that hard to figure out what it should be. If you don't know who Alan and Emily are and you don't know what they're worth to you, it's a much more difficult decision. It influences the media selection. So now Bill's able to tell him exactly what does Alan watch, when. What's he listening to in the morning? What is he doing and what is he not doing? And it influences the flighting of the advertising. Again, we're not going to be spending time advertising to Phil before the season because Phil's not going to buy tickets before the season. He doesn't know when his kids have a baseball game or a play or something else that's going to be in conflict. And I touched on the idea of the new social suite that's devoted to Phil and his family, right? A very tangible thing that we were able to do now that we know what Phil does and who Phil is. The in-park experience is being tailored and improved for Alan. I think one of the things that the Indians found is that they had been doing lots of things against two of these segments, but really hadn't put a lot of focus on this guy once he's here standing in front of him waving, you know, dollars showing how important he is to them. But there's going to be a new premium club. There's new construction of a 100-seat premium game viewing experience, the best seating for the best customers. There's a new seating product in Lower Bowl, where Alan sits with more of what Alan wants, comfortable seats and just a nicer, easier experience, more comfortable patio-style seating, a semicircle table. They're tailoring the scoreboard, the entertainment, the music, the usher interactions, basically all of those touch points once I am in the stadium to Alan. And they've refreshed the advertising focus to focus on tradition of baseball, the Indians, which are bigger attendance motivators for Alan than they are for other groups. There's a new kids clubhouse coming for Phil. They renovated a suite that's going to give the kids an area to play. Parents can still watch and enjoy the game. I guess this came last year, actually. High level of satisfaction with the area. 15% of people who came to the game and went there said they wouldn't have come without it. Okay. Again, programming that area of the park to be completely family-focused. Again, we've got a family-friendly usher. We've got increased mascot appearances, food and beverage for families, unique music and scoreboard and entertainment on family-heavy days. We can tailor not just our traditional advertising, but we can tailor the experience that these different groups are having in our ballpark, and in particular in different sections of the ballpark. There have been increased promotional giveaways and activities that are trip drivers for Phil as opposed to Victor and Victoria. The things that are going to bring a collection of four people into the stadium more often to spend lots of money on tickets and food and Coke and everything else, or Pepsi, I guess it is, right? And, again, they were doing lots of promotions, and now it's focusing those promotions on the places that they're going to be more valuable. And they're preparing to launch a comprehensive youth marketing plan for Phil's family. Phil obviously has value beyond just today in that he is bringing his kids along to be the next generation of 53-year-old Allens at some point in the process. Key barriers were identified and are being lowered to the extent that they're being lowered. They're introducing new parking and concession value offers, a couple of the key barriers for the two groups. They're working with the city to provide easier and improved transportation alternatives. And the insights have actually armed not just the sort of the general marketing, but the corporate marketing piece of this. Courtner Partnerships now have and can demonstrate a much clearer understanding of who's in the ballpark, right? So there's always been an understanding. Again, the work that that Bill talked about is great. And now, you know, this provides even the sales guys a better focus on who's here, right? If I know 40 or 50% of the attendees in any given night is Alan, who would be a good corporate partner is probably very different than if it's Emily, or than if it's even if it's Phil or Victor, right? So it's allowing them to aim a little bit better, knowing who a good target is. It's allowing them to have increased credibility with those prospects and for renewals, and it's improving the customization of partner opportunities. Again, we know who Alan is, we know where Alan sits, we know what he wants, and we know how he might or might not be linked to your brand. Yep.
Do you ever use specific players to segmenting? I'm just thinking, you know, I'm in Chicago, and I forgot the name of the guy, but he was an average player, but women just loved him.
Yep. The Jacoby Ellsbury of Chicago, whoever that is, right? Yeah.
Todd something, but you were the Brewers, you maybe remember that guy.
But that, Nick?
Yes, yeah. Women loved him. You know, he had one really good year in 05, but, you know, I noticed an inordinate number of women were wearing his jersey.
Yep.
And we talked about this, but I wanted to ask, do you look at players and say, okay, this is one player that we can target to that group to bring in? Do you ever ask, who do you like the best?
Yeah, we did not do that here, and it's one of those places, one of those things that hit the cutting room floor on the survey, but it is definitely the kind of thing. I mean, I think having an understanding of who the groups are, you could probably launch a reasonable guess at who they would be, but again, we put this tool in place to say, now we can find these guys in the future with additional research, and those are the types of questions that you can ask, and you can go and get You could understand Q scores. Actually, did you guys do something around Q scores for the different? Yeah. So they are, yes, tying the Q scores or the sort of the rating of a player or management or whoever to the different segments and understanding exactly what you're saying, who really responds to who.
And like in Chicago, I'm not familiar with Cleveland, but Chicago is a pretty ethnically diverse community where you have a lot of Asians and Hispanics, and you know, you could do it there too.
Yep.
You have a Hispanic player that's, you know, you may be able to bring in new, you know, they're not the two people that in the survey, but you can reach beyond that universe and maybe attract a new
Or you are attracting the Hispanic version of Alan, right? I mean, that there is a, you know, there is race and ethnicity and those types of things, but in those populations, there are people who have sort of the same core set of needs and attitudes and beliefs about the team who are Hispanic as non-Hispanic. That's another area. We look at all of this information and say, what are the drivers that make up these different segments? Is it race and ethnicity? We actually evaluated that as one of the tools that says we should look at Hispanics differently from non-Hispanics. And in terms of the things that are ultimately drivers of whether somebody is a good target for the Indians or not, in this case, there was no relationship there. Now, maybe there are some specialized, more niche things that you want to do. If the Hispanic community in a particular market is more responsive to a Hispanic player, then sure, that's an even more targeted version of this. But here, race and ethnicity didn't really matter. It was not a driver of whether I like the Indians or I don't like the Indians. So, I think the last thing, the season ticket sales force now has tailored scripts. So last thing, do a good old-fashioned trade. The Bloomberg Trade Analyzer indicates that this is a great trade for you. If you're interested in getting a copy of the presentation, just give me a business card. I've got it. Or if you can scribble down that highly intuitive web address down at the bottom, you can also download it. So I think I'm just about out of time, or probably even way out of time. So thanks.